Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts, coming off a sugar rush like you would not believe. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is the Reesey Peasy himself, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight?
I tend to think of myself as a delicious Reese's cup. In case you're wondering, folks, we just recorded the snack situation special for the month before recording this, so we're probably going to have a crash.
Yeah, there's going to be a moment in this week's show where we just stop.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some panel president lists, and then we're just going to be like, ugh. We're both going to fall asleep on air, and then the podcast will be our dreams. That's how it works, right?
Hey, by the way, speaking of dreams, like right here at the top of the show, people have still been sending us their War Rocket Ajax dreams. Please keep this going, because I think for this year's Halloween special, it's going to be the War Rocket Ajax Dream Warriors, and I'm very excited about that.
That is very exciting. I have been very entertained by all the dream stories we've been getting. They're all very, like... Basically, they're all just about us being involved in listeners' day-to-day lives, which is fantastic. Anyway,
very good.
It ain't Halloween yet. This week it was 69 days to Halloween, which was nice.
Very nice. That means it's 114 days till Christmas.
Yes, which, you know, not hashtag nice, but it's coming soon.
It's hashtag merry.
Indeed. We're going to be doing a panel president special this week. We're going to be taking your lists of characters and ranking them. Also, I'm leaving for vacation over the weekend, so no edits, as you can already tell by some of the crosstalk that you've heard. So, sorry if we're going to have some pauses and ums in here. But
I am going to have to go get my power cord at some point, so you're going to have to do some vamping.
Well, look forward to that vamp time. What if we crash when I'm vamping? What if it's a vamp crash? No. Vamp crash is officially the title of this episode, by the way. All right. Chris, before we get to the panel president ranking, we've got some business to take care of, starting with thanking our Patreon supporters.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they've kicked in as little as a dollar every month to help us pay the bills, get my teeth fixed, because I got two cavities, and help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. Matt, who do we have to thank this week?
No new names on the Patreon
list. What?
We had a few folks edit their pledges up this week, which was very nice, but no new names. Very nice. However, if you would like to be a name that we read out on the show, you can be that very person by heading over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and as Chris said, kicking in as little as $1 a month to help us keep the show going, to help us keep doing snack situation specials, to help us keep doing two-hour Every Story Ever specials, to get ad-free episodes of the show, to get art that only Patreon supporters get to see, bonus audio, and a whole lot more. So if any of that sounds cool to you, head on over there and help us out a little bit. That would be very helpful. All right, Chris, with that, let's do some checks and recs.
Let's do it. I thought it might be easier for you if I dropped the musical cues in here, but that's the only one I have.
Does it make it easier?
So it's just going to be that one every time we change segments.
You know what? I'm just going to let it stand. I'm not going to put in the regular the regular fucking music cue. That's how it's going to be.
It's either that or the Sailor Moon ones that I have for Sailor Business, Matt. I'm sorry.
Chris, what are you checking in with?
I am checking in. I had a good one and I can't remember it.
That's what you get when there's good, no edits, my dude. Live to tape.
The eclipse. That's what I wanted to talk about. Yeah. The reason I could remember is because we already talked about it a little bit on this month's Every Story Ever special. But I went down to South Carolina to my old stomping grounds of Columbia, which was right in the totality of last week's solar eclipse. And it was amazing. It was genuinely one of the coolest and weirdest things I've ever seen. Because it got dark in the middle of the day, but it didn't look like dusk because there were still shadows because it was 2:30 in the afternoon. So the brain has a weird hard time processing that. And also the fact that, like, it's still light in an area around you, but not where you are. It was really cool. It was a really weird and unique experience. And I had an absolute blast. I was hanging out with Shigeharu Kobayashi, who's one of the dudes behind Frank Comics, which we talked about in last week's episode when we talked about Dirty Cops and Princess Calabretta and some of their other stuff that they have. If you're ever at Heroes Con or a con in the Southeast and you see the Frank Comics booth, get the stuff they've got. It's genuinely great. But he ended up getting us onto the roof of the oldest skyscraper in South Carolina. And skyscraper's in quotes there because it's only about 10 stories tall. There's buildings all around it that are much larger now. But it's an older building right across the street from the State House. And we got to see, like, the eclipse from high up, which is very, very cool. Because you can see all, like, the streetlights coming on and everything down below you and the people, like, starting to freak out and get into the eclipse stuff. There was also, we saw some witchery. There was a local coven using the eclipse as a good time to cast spells to bring down capitalism, which I genuinely appreciated. So, yeah, a lot of good eclipse stuff happening, Matt.
They were on the roof with you?
They were down on the State House lawn.
I'm shocked nobody made them leave.
Well, I think they had, like, I think they had a whatever permit you need to, like, do a thing. Because there was some performance art elements to it, I think. Absolutely, shout out to the lady who, as soon as the eclipse was over, whipped out a Gadsden flag and ripped it in half. That was pretty exciting. But yeah, the eclipse was great. And actually, driving to South Carolina was not bad. Driving back up 95 with everyone on the Eastern Seaboard was a little bit more of a pain. But yeah,
I did all I could to avoid eclipse traffic. Now, Chris, how did you acquire eclipse glasses?
We got them. Chad's wife works at the library, so we got ours through her.
Okay.
We swung by and gave... Chad gave me my birthday present, which was a Japanese Man with a Golden Gun poster. And he gave Aiden her birthday present, which was a 12-inch Worf doll.
Very good gifts.
Yeah, very, very good. And he gave us the eclipse glasses when we met up with him.
Okay, so I have a whole eclipse glasses saga. My mother asked me to order some eclipse glasses on Amazon, which I knew was full of fake eclipse glasses. So I had to, like, dig and dig and dig to find eclipse glasses that I knew were certified and would really be real eclipse glasses. And I finally found those, and it was a pack of five. So I ordered that pack of five eclipse glasses, I would say, a good 2 weeks before the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I would be fine to get those in plenty of time to, like, take them to my mom and keep a couple pairs for myself. As it turns out, they arrived, like, 2 days before the eclipse, which meant that I had to like rush the hour and 15 minutes over to my mom's house to drop them off. And my mom had promised 4 pairs of the 5 to people, so I only got to keep 1. So what ended up happening was, because Marlene had to go to work and I was at home working, so we ended up cutting the eclipse glasses in half. So we each had 1 lens of eclipse glasses. So I was like monocling it up at the eclipse, looking at it, which actually went just fine. It was not a problem at all. But real eclipse glasses down to the wire stuff for me.
Yeah, there were like, I heard about like shortages, but like there was a dude just giving them away at the State House in Columbia, and then there was another dude selling them after that guy ran out and getting like $10 a piece for them. Yeah. Or maybe 20. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it was a good time. And it sounds like the witch performance was not equally stunning as the eclipse, but certainly very additive. The South Carolina State House lawn is not where I would think that would be allowed to happen, but I'm very glad it was.
Listen, let me tell you something about Columbia, South Carolina. It's a cool town, and it only got cooler when I moved.
Well,
For some reason.
I'm not talking about the town of Columbia. I'm talking about, like, legislators and people around the State House.
That's true. So, Matt, what is your check this week?
My check is... Well, now, Chris, we are partners here at Clitus Media.
That's true.
We do a couple
and
shows
in life.
Together. And, that's right. We do a couple shows together, and... But... You know, in addition to that, you have some additional podcasts. You have Xena Warrior Business. You have Sailor Business. So you're doing some side podcasts. And this week, I have recorded the first episode of a new podcast that I'm doing with Matt Fisher.
Ah, Matt Fisher. I love that guy.
Matt Fisher, formerly of the Life Leave Me Alone podcast, he has broken that show off into a couple new ones. One of them is called Sad Dads, where he and another dad just talk about dad life. And I'm not a dad, so I'm not on that show. Instead, I'm on Matt's new show, where we got to figure out like kayfabe names for each other, because we can't just both be calling each other Matt through the whole thing. It's called Smark of the Beast. And...
That is a Matt Fisher-ass podcast name.
It sure is. And what we're doing on the show is much like what we do with Every Story Ever and Panel President and Word Heavyweight Champion and all our other ranking stuff, Matt and I are going to be ranking everything in the world of wrestling. It's very much in the vein of Tom Sharpling's Order of Everything segment that we originally based Every Story Ever on, where he was ranking all kinds of different disparate stuff. So what we're doing on Smark of the Beast is, in addition to ranking wrestling characters, for example, and promos and maybe some specific matches and moves, we're also going to be ranking like just aspects of wrestling, like the idea that the apron is the hardest part of the ring. Or Matt had this one on our first episode. We ranked the idea of just signs from the Attitude Era, like crowd signs from the Attitude Era. So that is going to be starting this week. I think Matt is going to put up the first episode this Thursday. So keep an eye out for that. I'm sure once the links are out there, I'll be tweeting them out and so on and so forth. But we're going to be... hopefully putting out an episode every week of Smark of the Beast. And it's really just an excuse for us to talk about wrestling stuff for a little while every week. So that's what we're going to do.
I've got two things to say about this. One, I'm a little shocked and a very tiny bit hurt that this is how I'm finding out you're doing a wrestling podcast, because it's very exciting and I will absolutely listen to that. Two, I was just talking to our mutual pal Ben Gully about this a couple days ago. But what do you think is better? I'm gonna get you to do a little sampling right now.
Okay.
What do you think is a better weird conceit of pro wrestling? That the apron is the hardest part of the ring, or that you can reverse the pressure of the figure four by rolling over?
Probably reversing the pressure of the figure four, because it's so... It makes zero sense. Like, the idea that the apron is the hardest part of the ring, you can figure that out in your head. You can rationalize that, right? There's no rationalizing turning over the figure four, reversing the pressure. You just have to believe it. You just got to believe. It's all about selling, right? It's all about whether they sell that hurts or not. So as much as I love the idea that the apron is the hardest part of the ring, and anytime somebody falls on the apron, I like saying out loud, oh, that's the hardest part of the ring. The figure four thing is more ridiculous, and therefore more fun.
That's fair. That's very fair.
All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week is going to be tangentially related to last week's recommendation, or maybe last week's check. As I mentioned previously on the show, I have just started playing some 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, and I'm really, really enjoying it. It seems like a great streamlining of the system. And I started running the Curse of Strahd campaign for a group that I'm playing with every week. That includes some friends of the show, some wives of me. So, you know, Aiden's playing, L. Collins is playing, a couple of our other pals. And we're people spread out all across America, as is usually the case with my D&D games. So I wanted to use Roll20. And this is a software that I've talked about before on the show. It runs in a browser window, and it's basically like a virtual tabletop. So you can put like tokens down and movement and draw maps that people can see all at the same time. It's really cool. But one of the cool things that they've done recently is that they've partnered up with Wizards of the Coast, and they've made full-on campaigns that you can buy through Roll20 and just have everything set up already in Roll20 to play. So I actually asked for, and they gave me a review copy of Curse of Strahd, the Roll20 version. And I gotta say, the cover price of the Curse of Strahd book is $50. The digital version is also $50. And that seems really expensive. But it is amazingly laid out. There is so much in there that just makes it so easy to run. I was playing around with it yesterday, and I'm going to be running the players through it this weekend. And so I was just poking around on the maps, and they have all the tokens for every monster in the places where they're supposed to be. They have traps. They have different layers of things. They use a thing called dynamic lighting that I'm not sure if I'm going to actually use, because it's a little too realistic for the way that I like to play D&D. But they literally, like, you can designate a player who's carrying a torch, and then that area of the map is lit up. Like, that light source shines down hallways, and you can only see the part that the character with the light source illuminates. It's so cool. But just the idea of not having to worry about placing monsters on the board. And if you're in an environment where there's random encounters, like they include all that so that you can move it all onto the board as needed. And they've even got stats and everything. It's really, really awesome. So if you're curious about that, I don't know if they've got a sample campaign that you can play, but I'm sure you can find like more in-depth reviews online of Roll20's campaigns. I'm finding it to be extremely handy just in terms of like getting an idea of what's in the space and sort of figuring out how each encounter is going to go. But it's so handy and so cool, and there's so many like really good handouts and the ability to share stuff with players without like scanning things, or if you have a PDF, like cropping it out and making a JPEG. It's really, really awesome, and it's got me really excited about playing this D&D campaign that I was already really excited about. So definitely check that out if you are of the tabletop gaming persuasion, and maybe you'll find something in there that can really help you out with your campaign. Matt, what are you up to this week? What's your recommendation?
Well, I just want to say, like, hearing about the Roll20 stuff, again, makes me increasingly interested in wanting to do, like, some kind of tabletop game, because another part of the reason why it's always been like hard for me to get into it is having to go to a place and then having to deal with like all the papers and the mess, right, of doing that kind of gaming. So Roll20 putting all that like on a desktop for you is nice. That sounds nice.
Yeah, it's like I love making player handouts. I legitimately do. Like, I will often, I've had multiple campaigns where I've made, like, newspapers that kind of report on the players' exploits as they become more and more famous. And I like to, like, put little jokes in them, too, because that's the kind of person I am. But I think I read somewhere in the description of the Curse of Strahd campaign, they said it was 350 hours of work that a DM would do to get this level of quality. And, like, it's all in there. Like, you can very easily see it just in what is, you know, the way the maps are laid out. Oh, and I should say, the maps in the book of Castle Ravenloft, which is kind of the main area of the adventure, are all done in an isometric view. That's really cool, and it gives you an idea of, like, the scale of the castle as far as vertically. But the Roll20 version exclusively has, like, top-down maps for, like, actual tactical play in the way that you would use, like, a battle mat. And it's really, really cool to see that stuff, too, and get a different idea of how the castle works and looks. It really is, like, 21st century role-playing game stuff that I'm super excited about.
Yeah, that's super exciting. From my side of things, I'm going to recommend a documentary that you can watch on Netflix right now. It's called Nobody Speak. And before you ask, the Run the Jewels song is not in there. So apologies on that end. I was expecting it to be there too, but it's not. It's not there. Instead, what it is DJ Shadow and Run the Jewels. Don't want to leave DJ Shadow out of things. The movie, however, is all about sort of the state of the press right now in 2017 and some of the big things that have changed that or affected that. And, you know, as listeners may know, I spent several years of my life as a newspaper reporter. I was a member of the media. And so all that stuff is very interesting and important to me. And I'd say there are two main stories that make up the documentary, even though there's a bigger through line about sort of the state of the American press right now through the whole thing. But the first story is the Hulk Hogan versus Gawker lawsuit, which has its like weird salacious celebrity elements about it, but is also a very like genuinely important First Amendment freedom of the press case. Freedom of the press and / privacy case. And there's a pretty in-depth look into that case, into how it affected Gawker, into the actual Gawker journalists who got involved in it, and how Hulk Hogan, through the whole thing, was sort of this weird pawn that the billionaire Peter Thiel was using to get back at Gawker for some stuff that they had written about him in the past. There's a lot of good stuff and interesting stuff in there to dig into. The other story is about the Las Vegas Review-Journal, which is the biggest newspaper in Las Vegas and in the state of Nevada, and, you know, was sort of the newspaper of record for the state of Nevada, which had been writing about a billionaire who owned many casinos on the Las Vegas Strip, named Sheldon Adelson, who had been trying to buy the paper for years and years. And they'd always said no, partially because the paper writes so much about Sheldon Adelson and has to cover him. A few years ago, Adelson ended up buying the paper through this network of like shell companies. And there's this whole part about this meeting where this like obvious front man for the shell companies shows up and talks about how, like, don't worry about who has bought the paper, just do your job. And once you say that to a room full of reporters, it's like an invitation to get them digging into your shit. Also, as it just so happens, the publisher at the Las Vegas Review-Journal at that time, who was sort of leading that meeting, is my old boss. So I knew that guy. I like a guy showed up in that movie and was like, hey, I used to work for him, which was a weird coincidence. But that aside, the whole story about the Las Vegas Review-Journal, like picking this up and figuring out who actually bought them and reporting on it, whether they had permission or not. And then, you know, obviously there was fallout from that, but that was like super inspiring journalism stuff for me. That reminds me why I got into that field to begin with and why I wanted to be a part of it for as long as I was, and why that's still kind of ingrained in me. So if any of that is of interest to you and you have any interest in the news media or, you know, what can be good reporting, then I would invite you to watch that movie, because it like – kind of got me head up by the end of it, much like the movie Spotlight got me head up by the end, just by virtue of being like, journalists expose the truth. Nobody Speak did that for me as well. So I enjoyed watching it a lot, and I just kind of turned it on Netflix on a whim. So if you're looking for something to watch on Netflix and have 90 minutes to watch a documentary, that is one I would say is worth watching. All right, Chris, that's going to do it for Checks and Recs. Let's talk about some comics.
Do I need to hit the drop again?
I'm waiting for it.
It's going to be really bad when we get sued out of existence by Tom Sharpling for literally stealing all of his bits. Listen to The Best Show, everybody, thebestshow.net.
All right, Chris. One of the comics that came out this week was Nightwing New Order Number 1, which is an Elseworlds book that is very buck wild, like very weird in concept. It is written by Kyle Higgins. And who does the art on that book, Chris?
I believe it's Trevor McCarthy.
Okay. It's a really weird concept for a comic book.
Yeah, it's Trevor McCarthy, Dean White as colorist, and Clayton Coles on letters.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, first of all, it's been a while since we've gotten an Elseworlds, right? Like, I remember when this book was announced, like, seeing people who seemed unfamiliar with the concept, because it's been so long since we've gotten one of these. And the same happened with that Joker book that's coming up, what is it called, White Knight?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, this is a... This is, like, a 1997-ass Elseworlds book. In a way that I kind of love. But it is a weird, weird story.
So, here's the concept. Dick Grayson, Nightwing, at some point took it upon himself to end superpowers, to make people with superpowers have to take drugs so that they don't have superpowers anymore. Like, obviously something happened in this particular universe, this version of the DC universe, where Dick Grayson, who is a kind of a weird character to put this on, honestly, said no more superpowers. So the bulk of this book takes place in 2040, Dick Grayson is the head of a what I would assume is a worldwide organization.
It's at least national.
Yeah, called the Crusaders. And their whole deal is they enforce these strict laws about nobody having superpowers. And I'm going to give away the ending here, so if you don't want to be spoiled on Nightwing the New Order, skip ahead. By this point in time, Dick Grayson has a son, and there's a whole scene in here where Dick comes home, Alfred is there, and he's taking care of Dick's son. They talk about Batman a little bit. They talk about Dick growing up. And Alfred kind of digs into like why Dick is doing this. Like, doesn't he think it's wrong to take people's superpowers away? Because, you know, a lot of them were just born that way, and they're just different. And Dick says, well, there's lots of reasons why we do this. And then by the end, the last page reveal, which is somewhat obvious but also kind of neat, is that Dick Grayson's son, it turns out, has superpowers of his own.
Hey, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
You got to vamp for like 30 seconds.
All right, I'm vamping here. I don't know where Batman is in this comic book. He's mentioned and he's discussed. And there's a scene in the beginning where Dick Grayson basically single-handedly takes down the Justice League. So clearly, you know, there it was the regular DC universe up to a point, and then it took this turn to become the world that it is, that is presented here. But like, I'm assuming that at some point in the course of however many issues this limited series is, we will see like where Batman is and whether he's part of a group that is maybe kind of resisting the Crusaders.
Okay, I'm back.
I'm assuming that some kind of group that's resisting the Crusaders is going to show up at some point in here.
Well, they mentioned that Batman's dead.
Is he dead? Okay.
They like when Dick is talking to Alfred, they mention that Bruce is dead. Like he says something like you saw how bad it got after Bruce died. So I'm assuming that whatever the inciting incident was that led Dick to, decide to kill Superman, which is bananas.
Yeah,
is that that Bruce died, like Batman died, and that's what happened.
And maybe Dick blames Superman for that,
Or someone with superpowers, or the fact that Batman dies. Like, Batman was the only thing keeping people with superpowers in check. Here's a couple things about this. First of all, I like Kyle Higgins and I like Trevor McCarthy, like, in general, a good deal. And I'm interested in seeing where this book goes because it is such a weird premise. It doesn't seem like it works with Dick Grayson. I do think that last page reveal is super obvious, like from the start. I don't hold that against the book, honestly. I would have liked to know more. I would have liked to know way more about the history of what happened, because it asks all these questions, and I'm sure the point of the series is that we're going to get them doled out as we go along. But I'm way more interested in why does Dick Grayson take out all the superheroes, then Dick Grayson's son has superpowers. It's such a weird non-factor for me in this book, mainly because he's just going to make his kid take the drugs, like the inhibitor drugs. It's fine. It's whatever.
What's really strange, and the big question is not even so much like how Dick was driven to this, but how he is suddenly someone who's okay with killing.
Yeah.
Or who seems to not have the moral grounding of Dick Grayson as we know him.
Yeah. The other question I have is obviously who is Jake's mother? You know, because that's spoken of in very pointedly vague terms.
She's talked about only with pronouns. She's not named. I mean, the obvious, it would obviously be Barbara Gordon, but maybe it's not Barbara Gordon. I don't know.
Well, the teaser for the next issue is like Mother Like Son, so I was assuming maybe Starfire, but the Jake certainly does not look like he's half Cameronian. The point is, we've got a lot of questions about this, and it's such a weird... It's so weird. Like, I would be really curious to talk to Kyle Higgins and, like, find out what the impetus was behind this project. Like, I don't want to get all into the where do you get your ideas kind of line of questioning that's terrible that everybody hates. But I am curious, like, why Dick Grayson? Like, why this story? Like, why... What is it about Dick that makes him work in this story as opposed to anybody else who's not powered? Like, Dick seems like such a weird character, and maybe that's why, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I'm also curious how long this has been in the works, because you're not wrong about this being a 1997-ass Elseworlds story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kyle Higgins is not that old.
He's not, but, like... It almost seems like a nostalgia for Elseworlds stories sort of thing. But I don't know.
Yeah, Kyle Higgins is 3 years younger than me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go walk into the ocean, I think.
Maybe we can get Kyle Higgins on the show. We should try.
We probably should. Like, because, again, like, he's a guy who has written what I think is some really good stuff. And I mean, we've had him on the show to talk about Power Rangers, right?
Yeah. So... We could probably get him on to talk about this. I would love to.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Dead of Winter number one from Oni Press, a comic based on a board game.
Yeah, this is from our boy Kyle Starks, I don't know if dream project is the right word, but like you said, Dead of Winter is based on a board game. And I know for a fact that Kyle is a huge, huge fan of Dead of Winter, the board game. And I know this because he convinced me to get it. I've played it a couple times. It's really, really fun. I think I've even wrecked it on the show back when I got it. It uses a really interesting mechanic where you're given different problems that you have to work with. And you sort of have to decide with the other players like how you're going to tackle each problem and whether you're going to make the sacrifice that you need to. And it also has like this really cool cast of characters. And the best thing about the cast of characters is that they're all survivors of a zombie apocalypse, because the premise of the game is that it's the zombie apocalypse, it's the middle of winter, and you're basically like trapped in a safe house is what you would call it, like a fortified area where you're safe, but you have to like venture out, and that's where you start getting problems. And the best thing about the game is that one of those characters is a dog in a cape named Sparky, and Sparky just fucking hates zombies. And that is the main character of this first issue of Dead of Winter. And I should say it's written by Kyle, illustrated and colored by Gabriel Batista, who goes by Gabo, and is lettered by Crank with an exclamation point. And it's a hoot. It has all that good Kyle Stark stuff, but like in the context of a zombie apocalypse story in a way that I think is really fun and clever, in the same way that the game is clever. Like, it plays with these interesting characters that you have to sort of deal with and rally around and the different ways that they approach the zombie apocalypse, but also like deals with the idea of, oh, we've got to go out and keep searching these locations, even though like we've already been there and the locations are stripped from anything valuable because that deck of cards that we've been going through is gone now. It's an incredible translation of like board game mechanics to a narrative. And it also is a Kyle Starks comic, and it also stars a dog that kills zombies. So, like, there's nothing about this comic that you should not buy. And it isn't actually out this week. I think it's a couple weeks old, but I got it in my my Oni box today, and I just grabbed it and read it as soon as I could, because it's one I've been waiting on. So definitely, definitely check out Dead of Winter.
One last comic that I'm going to talk about real quick is War Mother number one, the first issue in a new mini series about a character who had a one shot during the 4001 AD event last year, And this is a continuation of that. Basically, the lead character, War Mother, is what you might call the tribal leader of this village in the far-flung future. And she is the only one who sort of has the strength or ability to leave the village, go out and scavenge for resources and food and anything else that might be out there in the world. Because it is a rough place out there. It's not easy. And resources are scarce, however. And so a big part of this issue is, you know, people in the village saying, hey, why can't we go out there? Why can't we do this? Why are you the only one who has this ability to go out and scavenge for things? And so War Mother ends up deciding, okay, well, if you're going to insist on going out and doing this, let me kind of blaze the trail for you. Let me go scout, and then when I give you the signal, you can come along. But I'm not going to let you go out there, you know, without me checking on the pathway for you first. And that sets off a series of events that lead to a pretty wild cliffhanger. Also, I probably should have noted this earlier. War Mother has a gun that talks.
Oh, okay.
Because it's part of her. It's like the gun is her kid, sorta.
Like, well,
it refers to her as mother, and like she refers to it as a symbiotic weaponoid. That is bonded to her as it came from her own flesh.
Symbiotic weaponoid. Oh, that's delightful.
It's good stuff. It's like a good sci-fi future kind of thing. That's a different kind of take on what you might call the Mad Max template. It's not too far removed from, like, if you had a Furiosa solo series about, like, what she was doing maybe before she showed up at a Morton Joe's place. It's by Fred Van Lente as the writer. Steven Segovia does the art, which looks beautiful. And the colors are by Elmer Santos and Andrew Dollhouse. It's a good-looking comic. It is an enjoyable read, and I like that cliffhanger in the first issue a bunch. So that's it for that, and that's going to do it for our comic segment, Chris. Now it's time for us to rank some characters, and I'm going to ask you not to do the drop on this one because we have a brand-new panel president special theme that I'm going to play right now.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
From the President's office in the White House.
Panel President.
Now what is the Panel President list?
Panel President. We take some listener-submitted lists and place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list. From best to worst, we elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. Panel President. That theme came to us from Lyndon Kaiser, who also put together the music we use for the Every Story Ever specials that we do. Lyndon does good work, and I want to thank him very much for doing that little musical sting for our panel president specials. It's real handy and differentiates these specials from the episodes where we just do a regular panel president segment. Chris, what is panel president?
Panel president, Matt, is the segment where we rank characters on a grand list of best to worst. Our idea is that we're going to rank every single character there is. Although we might abandon it in favor of just a list of who in comics vapes. That's what I want to do next year. But we are currently sitting at a list of 263 comic book characters that we have ranked, including Spider-Man, Peter Parker, at number one, at the very top, and several others below him all the way down to the bottom.
Yeah, just it's just generally the bottom.
Yeah, I just don't want to. I think nobody in the bottom five is anybody I want to talk about ever.
Extremely fair. I am seeking out what is going to be our first list for this panel president special.
How did the vamping go, by the way?
Well, I talked about wondering where Batman was, and then you came in and said that Batman is dead. So you sort of put the kibosh on my speculation.
Oh, bummer.
Here's a list from Brendan Casey. I think we might find out that Batman's not actually dead, though.
I mean, I think that's a possibility.
This is a five more Batman villains of varying quality.
Okay.
A type of list we've been getting a lot of lately. Starting with the Tin-Eyed Man.
Ooh, the Tin-Eyed Man is not great.
He's got eyes on his fingers.
He has eyes in the worst possible place to have eyes. Do you know what I don't do every morning? Do you know what I, like, do my absolute best as a human being to not do? Is shove my eye against my coffee cup.
I mean, fair. I, years and years ago, when I ran a website called the International Society of Supervillains, that was a comedy blog, I wrote a list, perhaps designed to generate clicks, called something to the effect of the 11 lamest supervillains of all time or something like that. And I would probably change some of those selections now. But one of my selections for that list was, in fact, the Tin-Eyed Man. And what I said about the Tin-Eyed Man at that time still holds. You can blind him by tossing him a basketball.
That's very astute, Matt.
Like, all his eyes are in his fingers, and he doesn't have eyes on his face.
Yeah, that's the thing. He doesn't have, like, face eyes, which is the weirdest, like, the weirdest thing that I have to specify is that they're face eyes. They're on his fingers. And it's like, that not only, like, it's the worst idea, because, like, if you are blind, if you do not have the use of your eyes, if you do not have sight, then your hands are very important, but not, like, you still have to, like, touch things. The amount of things my fingertips come into contact with that I would do my level best to never allow near my eyes is, like, literally everything. Literally everything.
Do you think there have been good uses of the Tin-Eyed Man? Or is he just, like, full-on terrible? I hate his costume. I absolutely fucking hate his costume.
I mean, he's pretty bad. But, I mean, like, I like the Thogol stuff in, like, Batman RIP and, like that little bit of it. But, like, that stuff could be fine without ever coming close to involving the Tin-Eyed Man.
All right. Let's just rank him then. I mean, we're looking at the bottom area, right? Like, is he better than Mr. Zazz?
No, I don't think so. Because, like, here's the thing. Tin-Eyed Man is, like, a goofy-ass villain, right? But, like, he's not fun. Like, he's weirdly late. Like, he's in the mid-70s, that guy shows up.
Yeah, he's not, like, weird Silver Age fun, goofy bad guy like, say, Kite Man. Or Terra Man, who came later too. But Terra Man's just weird enough that you can love him. Tin-Eyed Man doesn't have it.
Yeah, I mean, I would put him above, like, fucking Hank Haywood, but actually, I don't even, like, you've got Pat below him, and I would rather read a story about Pat than I would, like, the Tin-Eyed Man, for sure.
Then let's put him between Pat Reynolds and Will Payton.
Ugh, what a place to be. Actually, I don't even want to put him there. I would rather read about the Cyborg Superman.
Would you rather read about Cluemaster?
Yes.
Then put him, what about Hawk?
Yeah, I'd rather read about Tonight Man than Hawk.
Okay, then he's going to go above Hank Hall, below Clue Master. Next here on Brendan's list is The Mime.
Like, The Mime?
The Mime.
The Batman villain, The Mime, as seen in the Lego Batman movie?
Yeah.
The Mime is also, like, not actually very good.
Camilla Orton is her name. She's another one that seems like she should be like a goofy Silver Age character, right?
Yeah, but she
doesn't show up until the late 80s.
Yeah, she's like one of those. She's one of those weird ones. I mean, like, I read that issue pretty recently, actually, because right before Comics Alliance went down, I did like a piece explaining all the obscure villains that you could get Lego figures of now. Orca, obviously, is the standout on that particular list, Dr. Grace Balin. But, yeah, she's just a crime mime, except her name is not the crime mime, which is a better name.
It is a better name. And one of her overarching traits is that she hates loud sounds, which is fucking stupid. Because mimes are supposed to no-sell sounds.
Like, are they supposed to no-sell sounds, or is it just like they're not supposed to make them?
They're not supposed to make them. But also, like, if you go up to a mime and start screaming in their face, they're not supposed to, like, suddenly, like, hit the ground.
And, I mean, that would be a pretty fucked up thing to do, Matt, like, to anybody.
I mean, I'm not suggesting that you should.
Like, yeah, you absolutely should not. Like, that's, why would you do that? That's, like, super fucked up, dude.
I'm saying that is not their weakness. That is not, like, but it is somehow the mime's weakness. It's
weird.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah. The mime's not good.
She's not good.
Still rather read about her than the Ten-Eyed Man.
Me too. Would you rather read about the Clue Master, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, Arthur Brown's not good, but he's not, like, staggeringly bad. It's just, well, like, there's, like, another guy who does all his stuff better.
Well, then the mime's going right above Ten-Eyed Man.
Yeah. I think it's gotta be that.
Up next is someone who I would consider to be more fun. And that is the Condiment King.
The Condiment King is great because the Condiment King was meant to be stupid. Like, the Condiment King's a joke villain.
Yeah. Now, the Condiment King first appeared on Batman the Animated Series.
Yes.
And did not show up in comics until after that.
Well, and not even, like, as a, like, a villain. Like, as a, like, the whole deal with that episode is that I think it's the Joker, right, is, like, making comedians, like, brain, like, zapping them with something that makes them want to go commit crimes.
That's right. Yes, 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 yes.
So, like, you know, it's got that going for it, and that's a pretty good idea.
And he has condiment guns. He has, and on Batman the Animated Series, he has ketchup and mustard guns. In comics, he has a more versatile condiment gun that shoots ketchup and mustard and relish. And, you know, nowadays he'd probably have sriracha in there.
He'd have, like, avocado toast guns. Millennials, right?
It is pretty fucking great that his real name is Mitchell Mayo.
It's very good. It's very good. Here's the thing. Like, he's a fucking goofball, but he's a goofball on purpose, as opposed to most of this list.
he's used in comics pretty judiciously to be that character who shows up for a couple pages for our hero to quickly take down before the main plot gets going. That's a role that is fulfilled by a number of Spider-Man villains, and Condiment King serves that role for not really Batman, but for members of the Bat family, because he's in Batgirl Year One and does that there, where it's Robin and Batgirl teaming up to beat him. And then he's in an issue of Birds of Prey, and then he's in a Robin story. Like, he has a very specific role, and he fills that role very well.
Yes, I think so. So where does he go? Like, do we have any other, like, on-purpose goofballs in here?
I mean, we have some, like, goofy characters.
We have the technician.
We have the technician. I mean, I think he's probably not as good as, but similar to Stiltman. Stiltman is one of those joke characters.
Well, but not originally intentionally.
Although he has definitely filled that role now.
Yes, very much so.
So the technician is considerably lower than Stiltman. Right now we have Stiltman at number 180 and the technician at number 208.
I don't think he's as good as the technician, to be honest with you. The technician's pretty fun.
Okay.
But I think he's better than... I mean, like, I kind of like him more than I like Phil Coulson, you know?
Yeah, that's actually where I went to. I would put him below the Plutonian, above Phil Coulson.
Oh, there goes my mouse. Okay, so number 215 on the list is the Condiment King.
Next here on Brendan's list is Kite Man.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. We both did it.
It's great that we're always going to do that from now on.
Tom King got us. He got us on that one.
Yeah, Kite Man's kind of great because his name's Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It literally, like, doesn't get better than that. Like, the jokes do not get better than fucking Kite Man being named Charlie Brown.
And you want to talk about goofy Silver Age characters. Kite Man debuted in 1960.
Oh, yeah. He's right in there. He is, like, in the heyday of gimmick crimes.
I mean, look, we've said this about other characters. Kite Man is very stupid. He's very stupid. Like Kite Man was on my list of lame supervillains also. But Kite Man is fun in a way that, like, Ten-Eyed Man is not. And that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, like, he's... I mean, because Kite Man exists in a world with Captain Boomerang, right? Like, he's not too far off from literally any other, like, gimmick supervillain that we just accept. Like, he's not far removed from Captain Cold in terms of premise. It's just that, like, there's a knowingness to Kite Man. Like, it's why Kite Man, hell yeah, is so funny. Because no one said that. No one had ever said that before.
But somehow Tom King figured out a way to make Kite Man fit, right? And yes. And Kite Man seems like one of those characters that seems like he should not fit at all. And yet he does.
I still feel like the tragic origin of Kite Man is, like, one of the, like, most enjoyable, like, self-aware comics of the year, probably.
I would not disagree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think Kite Man goes up here with, say, the technician, or maybe all the way up to toward where Stiltman is?
I mean, I think he goes... I think I would put him closer to Stiltman, honestly. Like, Wilbur Day is good, because he's been hanging in there. He's been putting the work in. Kite Man is a forgotten character who has suddenly re-achieved relevance. Yes. Improbably.
Yes.
But... I don't think he goes above Stiltman, but I would honestly put him. I'd put him above Master Pandemonium, and I would put him above Sinestro, because I got nothing for Sinestro. You know that.
B- but below Comet the Superhorse.
I would put him below Comet the Superhorse because Comet the Superhorse is fucking bizarre.
All right, then that's where
he's
he
not a horse, Matt.
You're right. Charles Brown, Kite Man, between Comet the Superhorse and Sinestro.
Number 187.
Hell yeah. Finally on Brendan's list is Zebra Man.
Zebra Man sucks. Like, Zebra Man is not even a Zebra Man, you know? Like, that's how fucked up that is. Zebra Man actually, like, has magnetic powers.
Yeah. I mean, he's got, like, stripy flesh.
Yeah, like, he looks like a zebra, but, like, that's a rude thing to call somebody who looks like a zebra. Just call him Zebra Man. I mean, if you really want to get into it, if you want to be real.
Yeah, but who would guess? Who would fucking guess that Zebra Man's power would be magnetizing things?
Oh, yeah, it's fucked up. It's very fucked up.
Now, here's something worth considering. There are two Zebra Men.
Yes.
So are we ranking Zebra Man 1 or Zebra Man 2?
I mean, I think we got to go to the... Like, these are clearly, like, your weirdo Silver Ages.
These are,
so
these
it's got
to
be Zebra Man 1.
Originals, yeah. Yeah, Zebra Man sucks. I mean, Bill Finger created him, and more power to him. But it's not one of Bill Finger's best.
Well, I mean, Bill Finger also created fucking Batman.
Yeah.
So I think Bill Finger's okay to have a stinker in there somewhere.
Look, Stan Lee created some shitty characters too.
Oh yeah, like everybody's got a couple of bat. Like one of the more fascinating things about Bill Finger is that he literally had a gimmick book. Like he had a notebook that he would carry around, and whenever he thought of like a gimmick crime, it would, like, he would just write it down, and that's where you get so many weirdo, like, Bill Finger characters from the 70s, like, from the 40s and 50s. Like, on the one hand, you get fucking Clock King out of that, and Clock King pretty much rules, but on the other hand, you know, you get a lot of one-offs, because that's how comics work. So yeah, I would say Zebra Man, not the guy's best. Batman, definitely the guy's best.
All right, where does Zebra Man go?
Low. Very low. Like, below Polka Dot Man, probably. I would say below Zaz. I'd rather read about Zaz. Does he go below the Mime and Ten-Eyed Man?
I mean,
like, we had stuff to talk about with those two. All we said about fucking Zebra Man was Zebra Man sucks.
I mean, he does suck. Like, at least Ten-Eyed Man is what he says he is. Like, he does have 10 eyes.
Yeah.
And the mime is a mime. So, I'd say put Zebra Man below those two.
Alright, so, below them, like, God, like, we're getting into John Arbuckle territory. I think I would rather read about John Arbuckle because I have read about John Arbuckle more recently than I've read about the Zebra Man.
Put him above Pandora, though. So between John Arbuckle and Pandora.
Yeah. Number 261. That is low for old Zebra Man. Sorry, Bill.
As you said, we've given plenty to Bill Finger in our time. All right. Our next list is going to come from Andrew Curl. And these are some C and D listers that he has some affection for.
Everybody loves to send us those C&D listers.
Hey, people have a real affection for C&D listers. The first one is Bob Diamond.
Are you talking about Bob Diamond from the Sons of the Tiger?
Uh-huh.
Talking about Marvel Comics' own Chuck Norris?
That's him.
I mean, he kind of sucks, too.
I'm talking about Robert Diamond.
Bob Diamond is He's like the last place Marvel martial arts character, right?
Probably, yes.
Like who's number one? Is it Shang-Chi? Or is it Iron Fist?
Probably a tie. Tie between those two.
Okay, tie between those two. White Tiger in third. Sons of the Tiger in fourth. Then Bob Diamond solo specifically, like, distant, like, eighth.
Bob Diamond was a Chuck Norris character at the time he was created. If he had been created in the 90s, he'd be like a Johnny Cage type.
Yes.
He would have been like a Steven Seagal, Jean-Claude Van Damme sort of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's his whole deal. That's all he is. He's just like popular white martial arts star of the day.
Yeah.
You could make Bob Diamond work if you made him an antagonist.
Well, I think Bob Diamond works in the role that he's in, which is that he just goes off and becomes a martial arts film star, right? Like, he's a superhero for a hot minute, but then he goes off and, like, stars in movies. Like, he's in the weird, the Power Man and Iron Fist Fight the Daleks issue.
Yeah.
Like, he's in that as Bob Diamond, professional actor, you know?
Yeah, he was also in I think, one of the recent Heroes for Hire retreads. Attempts once again at doing it.
Yeah.
But he hasn't had a whole lot of relevance in many years.
Yeah, like I don't think it's bad for there to be a guy who's, you know, like a guy Iron Fist used to know who's now just like in movies because it's more lucrative than fighting ninja crime. Like, I think that's kind of a cool idea, you know, but that he's, you know, he's nothing special. He's nothing special. Like, I would be mystified if there was Bob Diamond number one on the stands when I went to the store next time.
Yeah, if it was part of Legacy, I would be shocked.
Yeah.
Absolutely shocked.
Almost as shocked as there being a Darkhawk book.
Looking forward to that. Okay, so where does Bob go? Where's Bob land?
I mean, like, do we have a section of the list that's just a big bunch of nothing?
I mean, I feel like that's what we have said about Fletcher Arrowsmith and Prince Valiant.
Yeah, I mean, I think he goes below those two, for sure.
Put him below Constrictor, too. I think he would go above Newspaper Spider-Man, though.
I think he'd go below Newspaper Spider-Man.
Really?
I have affection for Newspaper Spider-Man.
Okay. Well, below that is Professor Zoom, Puck, stop me when I get to where you want me to be. Starman.
I think he goes above Professor Zoom.
Okay, so between Newspaper Spider-Man and Professor Zoom.
Yes.
Okay, that's where Bob Diamond will go. For this next one, move up the fucking list.
Okay. All right. I'm excited now.
It's Night Thrasher.
Oh, shit. Matt, you know I love fucking Night Thrasher. He's got a skateboard.
Yeah, hell yeah.
That dude thrashes by night.
Dwayne Taylor, man.
Yeah, dude. Dwayne Taylor of the New Warriors.
Can I say something about Night Thrasher that I think is universally true? He has always had the best costume of everybody in the New Warriors by a mile.
He has, but I think his costume sucks pretty bad. Like, you're absolutely right, but his costume still sucks.
I love it. I love the way Night Thrasher looks, yeah.
It's so, like, DIY. Like, but it's not supposed to, like, he looks like he's in a costume that he got at the store.
I mean, I think that's intentional. I just like the like helmet part of it. He doesn't necessarily look like he fits in the New Warriors. Yeah. Like cuz you've got like fucking Nova in there who looks like, you know, a polished superhero. Yeah. And Night Thrasher looks like okay, if you want to
Nova's
talk
got
about
a pretty good costume. Like we could say that Nova's got a pretty good costume.
Nova has a pretty good costume. If I was going to say like Phoenix Jones, the real life superhero of Seattle.
Yes.
Was inspired by anybody, I would say it was Night Thrasher.
Yes. But I don't think he was. I think it's just that Night Thrasher looks like a real world guy if he was trying to be a superhero.
Yeah.
Which is very weird.
Yeah. But I love that about him. I love that about him.
No, Night Thrasher rules. Like, and Night Thrasher, when Night Thrasher shows up in Contest of the Champions and, like, Outlaw, the British Punisher, is like, holy shit, dude, you're Night Thrasher. Like, you're, like, the coolest dude. Because when I was growing up, there weren't a lot of black superheroes, and you were out there, like, fucking kicking ass and doing skateboard tricks. I was like, hell yes, that's exactly how people should react to Night Thrasher. Night Thrasher kind of fucking rules.
I mean, I don't think there's any reason to doubt that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Night Thrasher.
I mean, we always think about him in regard or in as part of the New Warriors, but he's actually like had a good number of other appearances and other stuff. Like he fought the fucking Punisher.
Yeah, and Punisher told him his skateboard was cool and that he wanted him one. I vividly remember that shit.
He debuted in an issue of Thor.
Okay, that I did not know. Is he a Tom DeFalco Ron Friends creation?
He sure is.
Yep, that makes sense.
And he had his share of his own miniseries. He's had a number of his own miniseries.
That Night Thrasher wasn't, like, that they did not bring back Night Thrasher at the height of, like, the X Games, like, 2005. Like, why? Like, why, like, hey, you have a kick-ass skateboarding, like, vigilante hero. Like, put that dude in comics, man. I love Night Thrasher. He's awesome.
Now, am I wrong? There is a second Night Thrasher.
Yes,
I'm not
it's his brother.
That. It's his brother.
Yeah.
But we're ranking Dwayne, not Danielle. But
yeah.
I did want to make sure I'm not crazy and determine that there was a second Night Thrasher. So, I'm glad I've determined that. Okay. So, Dwayne Taylor, Night Thrasher, where does he go?
I mean, pretty high. Like, not only is he, like, we see a lot of potential in Night Thrasher. Like, I'm thinking about, like, Around Steel, you know? Like, the character that we've seen so much potential in.
Yeah.
Who doesn't feel like he's gotten the fair shake to live up to that. I don't think Night Thrasher's quite as good as Steel, but I feel like he's in that neighborhood of, like, he could be so much more than he is, like, than he is treated as.
I wouldn't put him above Dr. Simon Hurt or Thanos.
I'll tell you what, if they announce, like, a fucking Al Ewing, like, who would draw it? Like, who, like, Al Ewing Night Thrasher book with fucking, God, who would be the bit? Oh, Ghost Rider. Bananas. Who drew Ghost Rider? Was that Trad Moore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Al Ewing and Trad Moore's Night Thrasher. I would be more excited about that than I have been about comics in like 10 years.
Okay, how about here? How about just below Ultron, above Ultimate Spider-Man?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's a good place for it.
Okay.
Fucking Dwayne Taylor.
Next on Andrew's list is Valkyrie.
I like Valkyrie a lot, actually.
Yeah, I don't
talk
have
about,
any.
Talk about Brunhilde.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah, you talk about Valkyrie, the actual Valkyrie.
talking about the character who will appear in Thor Ragnarok coming soon to theaters.
Yeah, that's going to be dope. Hey, if you look up Valkyrie on Wikipedia, Matt, can you do this real quick? Can you look up Valkyrie on Wikipedia?
Okay, I will do that. I have looked her up on Wikipedia.
Is that the featured image that you expected for Valkyrie?
Nope.
No, it is not. No, it is not.
I mean, it is the cover to what might be the only Valkyrie solo comic.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
Yeah, it's very 1997 bad girl art. It is what it is.
Yeah, that's not the image of Valkyrie that I have in my head when I think of Valkyrie.
No. I got that John Buscema in my head.
Yeah, that shit's good. Like when she was actually in, like, doing some Avengers shit.
Yeah. Valkyrie's actually had a lot of good designs, I think, over the years. That cover notwithstanding, I think we've seen some good Valkyries.
Am I mistaken in thinking that Valkyrie actually took over for Thor for a while?
I think she might have been in the Thor Corps, but I don't think she took over. Matt, are you thinking of Eric Masterson?
I'm not thinking of Eric Masterson.
Are you thinking of Thunderstrike?
Absolutely not. No.
Are you just generally thinking of Thunderstrike?
No. I feel like there was a short period of time where Thor was out of the mix and Valkyrie took over for him. It's part of an Avengers run, but I could be mistaken about that.
I mean, you might be right.
Anyway, I'm that's neither here nor there. Valkyrie has been around for a long, long time. She's been around since, what, the late 60s or early 70s?
1970. She's a Roy Thomas, John Buscema creation from Avengers.
Yeah, and you know what she does in that first story? She beats up all the male Avengers to start a women's revolution. That shit is great.
Yeah, that's dope. That is dope. Is that the Lady Liberators story?
Mm-hmm.
It's comics trying. It's really comics trying and not quite getting there.
Well, it's Roy Thomas trying, right? So,
oh, Matt, are you thinking about that Kurt Busiek, Carlos Pacheco, Defenders story, where all the lady heroes were on the team? Like She-Hulk was on, and Clea were on the team.
Maybe I am. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever the case, Valkyrie's cool, and we should rank her.
Valkyrie's great. Like, I like, her cool, like, Shazam stuff is not, like, really good, because it's stuff that, like, was kind of ditched out of Thor, right? Like, Walt Simonson, like, tried to permanently get rid of the whole, like, you know, Don Blake thing. But I kind of like the idea of, you know, like, she draws her sword and turns into Valkyrie and has a Pegasus named Aragorn. Like, which those references are all over the fucking map. But, like, that stuff works in a way that, like, I don't think it works for, like, Thor. I think it's better when she's just a full-time Valkyrie. But
yeah, I
think, you know, yeah, I think Dragon Fang is a pretty cool, like, little bit of high fantasy in her character.
How do you think she ranks against Volstagg?
She's not as good as Volstagg, but, like, who is?
Fair. Well, here's who's right below Volstagg. Storm Shadow, the Atom, Swerve, Nick Fury Jr. I mean, I think she's as good as any of those.
I think she's better than Nick Fury Jr. I don't think she's as good as Swerve. I really identify with Swerve.
Okay, then let's put her between those two.
So Brunhilde of the Valkyrior comes into the list at number 107.
Next up on Andrew's list is Blue Marvel.
I want to table this one because I only read like six comics with the Blue Marvel in them. I've only read Ultimates. I haven't gone back and read like the other stuff. And I feel like there's more there to talk about that we're going to have to come back to.
Yeah, Blue Marvel's a really recent creation.
Yeah, but he's been in like a lot of comics. And the Ultimate stuff, like the Al Ewing Ultimate stuff I've read with him is really good. And it you know, honestly, he's the focus of a lot of it. But I still feel like I'm missing bits and pieces of the character. You know?
Yeah, I don't think I've read very many comics with Blue Marvel in them at all.
Yeah.
So I guess he was in the Mighty Avengers. But yeah, I don't think I'm comfortable ranking him. We'll have to catch up on that.
Yeah.
All right. Last here on Andrew's list is Victor Alvarez, Power Man.
That's the second Power Man who's like the teenager who teams up with Danny Rand in the Fred Van Lente Power Man and Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That guy's great. What happened to him?
I guess Luke Cage became far more prominent in Marvel comics. I don't know. He was like a major character in like Shadowland. And then he's just kind of gone now.
Yeah, like when did he vanished? Because like that Power Man and Iron Fist series was really, really good. And then Luke Cage got popular again, and then like Defender stuff happened on Netflix, and like so Danny and Luke like team back up, but like that Power Man and Iron Fist series that Van Lente and I think it's Mahmoud Asrar did together is like really fun. The comedy of death, like it's really good.
Yeah, so this version of Power Man really has kind of bounced around a lot. Because I think he kind of first shows up during the Shadowland kind of stuff. He shows up during Dark Reign. Because was he a villain at first? Was he a bad guy at first?
I'm not actually sure. Like I've only read him in the Power Man and Iron Fist series. Like I don't even think I read all of Shadowland. Shadowland was pretty weird, Matt.
Shadowland was pretty weird. You're right.
He's the son of Shades and Comanche.
Well, there was a whole storyline where he tried to beat up Spider-Man.
Yeah, but so, who hasn't?
I mean, haven't we all? But then he joined up with Iron Fist. Iron Fist trained him. Then he went to Avengers Academy.
Was he in Avengers Academy?
He was in Avengers Academy.
Wow, okay.
Then he was briefly in a version of the Mighty Avengers.
That's when Bobby DaCosta bought AIM and made it Avengers Idea Mechanics, right?
Yes.
I gotta read that shit, because that sounds great.
And then he teamed up with White Tiger. No, then he teamed up with White Tiger in the rebranded AIM. So that came after. He's kind of been all over the place. And I think he definitely has done that villain to hero turn.
Maybe so. Yeah, like, It's so weird to create a new Power Man right before the old Power Man, like, gets super popular again.
Yeah.
Because, like, Luke Cage isn't going by Power Man anymore, right? Like, he's just Luke Cage.
Just Luke Cage, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we'll find out if he's in some ongoing book that's happening right now, but yeah, I haven't seen him in a while.
I mean, look, I like him a lot, and I think, like, his relationship with Danny is really fun, because, like, I think we see Danny as... We don't get to see Danny as a mentor often, which I think is a fun thing for him to... Like, a fun role for him to be in, because usually he's, like, such a man out of time, you know? Like, not out of time, but, like, he's out of his element. He's the guy who, like... You know, like, yeah, he lived in a weird mystical city for 20 years and then came to New York and is hanging out with Luke Cage.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so where do you think Victor Alvarez is gonna end up on the list?
I don't think he's as good as Night Thrasher. I don't think he's as good as... Is he better than Garfield? Garfield's got longevity. Say what you will. Garfield has appeared in pages and pages of comics.
I mean, Spider Jerusalem is right below Garfield, and I would not put him above Spider Jerusalem.
Okay.
I mean, I would put him above Superboy.
Yeah, I don't think he's as good as Superboy.
Or Power Girl, or Linda Danvers' Supergirl.
That's the 90s Supergirl now.
I know. There's a lot to like about that version of Supergirl.
Okay. Well, in that case, I don't think he's as good as Harley Quinn or as Clarion. But he's better... I think he's better than Mephisto, but worse than Dormammu?
Okay, so between the two of them is Whirl.
Matt, Whirl's a helicopter with one eye.
Okay, so you're saying Whirl's better?
I think so.
Okay, so between Whirl and Mephisto is where Victor Alvarez goes.
Power Man 2, Victor Alvarez, at number 152 on the list.
And I think that's all we have time for. We really dug
into... Is that it?
We really dug into 10 characters.
Wow. They do go fast when we get to talking.
It has dawned on me that I never should have asked for lists of five for panel president. It's too many. Because we could talk about these characters for a long, long time, as you all just heard. But if you would like to send us a panel president list, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. We are slowly but surely getting through all of the line stepper panel president lists. And doing our best to get through as many of those as we can. Maybe someday we will be able to get to other lists too. That email address is also where you can send every story ever lists. If you have a listener question for us, you can send it to us that way. If you want to just drop us a line about something else, if you want to sponsor the show, do it there. That would be very cool. You can also send us questions or drop us a line on Tumblr. Our Tumblr is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. You can also check out the panel president list, which I'm hoping to update very soon. I've updated the Every Story Ever list recently, and I'm hoping to get the panel president list fully up to date as soon as I can. If you like the show, go over to Apple Podcasts, please, and leave us a review. The more positive reviews we get there, the more we are featured, which is good for us. It helps out the show. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. I've tried to make it as easy as I can by having one repository with links to all my stuff, and that is mattdwilson.net. That is where you can go to find links to everything that I do. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find links to everything I do online at the-isb.com. You can check out stuff that I've written for Polygon, stuff that I've written for Looper, and stuff that I'm writing for Geek.com now. There's a new weekly column every Friday in the style of the old Q&A column that I used to do that I will not name, but it's called That's What's Up Now, and you can ask me questions on Twitter if you'd like, and you can find links to that at the-isb.com. You can also go by your local comic book store. It was just officially announced. I think we might have talked about it a little bit last week, but Chad and I are doing Dark Hawk, number 51, as part of Marvel Legacy with Kev Walker, which is so exciting for us. Kev Walker is rad, and we've been literally asking about Dark Hawk for like 2 years at Marvel, because Dark Hawk, here's a little secret you might not know, Dark Hawk fucking rules. Put Dark Hawk on this list at number one, because Matt, is the Spider-Man of the 60s better than the Spider-Man of the 90s? I think not. But you can find all that stuff on my website. You can follow me on Twitter at @theisb if you want. And yeah, thanks everybody. That's going to do it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with another one. Matt, I hope you enjoy your vacation.
Thank you very much. In addition to me taking a vacation next week, I'm not taking a vacation from the show. I will be back, to record a new episode next week. So you won't miss me. We are taking a little break this week from making a recommendation for an organization that people can contribute to. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't go contribute to a worthy charity this week. But in the meantime, if anybody listening knows of an organization that they would like for us to highlight on the show, I invite you to drop us a line. I invite you to email us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com and let us know about, someone out there doing good that could use a shout out from us here on the show, because we're doing our best to shine a light on as many organizations that are doing good work as we can. And we would love to know about more. We would love to be turned on to some organizations that are doing good stuff that maybe we didn't know about. So let us know about stuff.
Absolutely. Please do.
And that's going to do it. That is going to do it. And Chris, it's time for the show to be ranked.
Okay.
And I've asked someone to come and set the scene for us for the show ranking. So I'm just going to turn it over to them.
I'm terrified right now. I just want to throw that out there.
They're going to talk about how the show ranked this week. So here we go. Cut to an island. This island is gorgeous. It's beautiful. You've never seen anything like it in your whole life. And it's full of these birds, these beautiful birds that are just full of life and so incredible. There's something like you couldn't even imagine seeing before. And Taco, one of these birds turns to you and it says, "I'm a great bird." Before you can even get a good look at what's happening, these birds fly into the air. Their wings spread, and they go into the sky, and they perch in front of the clouds. And you can see that they have formed into a shape of three letters. And those letters, as you look deep into the clouds, you're shocked to realize what they say. Those letters are HQC.
You're going to get us in trouble, Matt. You're going to get us in trouble.
We love you, everybody.
We love you, everybody. Bye.
Yeah! Flash.